Welcome to Rewilding Love. This season is with a couple on the brink of divorce.
This is episode number 48, an exploration of personal responsibility and free will with Angus and Rohini.
Free will is just a part of my conceptual mind. Free will is nothing to do with that impersonal mind, where there is no judgment, there's no recrimination.
The understanding that I have is good enough, and I'm not trying to seek more, do more, try to be better in some way, that I am actually showing up better in the world.
If I really got a hold of that, I think that probably there would be pretty much zero suffering in my life.
Can we absolutely open our hearts to ourselves and see our innocence, see our goodness?
All that I'm trying to do is to sort of like keep up with that intelligence behind life, who's always doing what's best for me.
I just love the feeling of freedom that I experience when I recognize that it's not on me. Like, this is just so freeing and it's so healing.
That psychological innocence allows us to have that sense of liberation.
When people take the pressure off of themselves, when they experience their true nature, relationships flourish.
You are listening to Rewilding Love with me, Angus Ross.
And me, Rohini Ross.
Rewilding Love is a podcast about relationships.
We believe that love never disappears completely in relationships. It can always be rewilded.
Relax and enjoy the show.
Welcome to today's episode.
Welcome.
And today we thought we would talk about personal responsibility. And this was on my mind because it was something that Tanner mentioned in our episode last week, where he said that he found that the personal responsibility of the understanding can sometimes be a hard pill to swallow. Do you remember him saying that?
I do remember him saying that, and you seemed to be fine with that at the time, but now and afterwards, you had a point of reflection to share with me around that.
Well, I wanted to make sure that people are clear that the direction that we're pointing in is not about self-help and personal control. It's very much looking at how things work, and that really we're describing how experience is created. And in that description, it is created from the inside out. Our experience is a reflection of the thoughts that we're identifying with. So we have a very subjective experience of reality. No two people have exactly the same experience. And so because of that, we have a unique experience, but we're not consciously personally responsible for creating that experience. It's not in our control. And I think that a lot of self-help points people in the direction of making them personally responsible for the experience that they're creating. And I know I believed that for a really long time, and it was a lot of work to try and manage that and a lot of work to try and control that. And I feel like I suffered for many years because I put so much emphasis on managing my experience. And really what we're pointing to is how it's just through understanding how experience is created, not trying to change it, but that allows us to be with it in a much more graceful way. And that sometimes we're going to be caught up and sometimes we're not, but it's not our responsibility to try and change that. But when we understand what's going on, we can be with that a whole lot more easily. And I think this is really important for relationships.
Yeah, I don't know why I got so caught up in you making that remark and for it really not landing in a way where I found it acceptable.
Well, people don't know that. Do you want to give some backstory?
Well, no. I mean, when I say I didn't find it acceptable, it's not like I had some sort of histrionic fit. I found myself struggling with it because I kind of can see where Tanner's coming from in making that remark. And I know that there's a misunderstanding there for me, which I wasn't really clear about at the time, because something's ringing true in what you're saying, obviously. But there's another part of me that's sort of allowing myself to see it from Tanner's point of view and realize that it is a struggle. Well, that's what at least this is how I was thinking about it. And then...
Well, wait a second. What's the struggle? Just so that I understand.
The struggle for me is that on some level, my intellectual mind is entertaining the thought that I have... a decision can be made here to help me control my experience. I can make an alternative decision that will help me have a better experience than I'm now having, that I have some sort of control over it, and that I am in that respect responsible.
So you're saying you have control over your experience? Sorry, I'm not understanding.
Yeah, no, I know this is where I'm struggling to find some clarity in what you're sharing and how there's an insight for me to have here, because I'm a little bit confused. So I know that in itself suggests I'm onto some kind of growing edge. I see Tanner's point of view in a way where I see it for myself. On some level, I see it for myself when I'm really caught up and stuck in my intellectual machinery. I'm thinking that there's possibly a different decision to be made here, that I have some sort of control over it, which is always going to be a feature of my intellectual machinery if we're going to suggest that the ego is the eye of that machinery. My ego couldn't even fathom the thought that it's not responsible because it's all entrenched in the world of form and my intellect. What we're talking about here is something that's formless. We're talking about an intelligence behind life that's always, in the way that I see it, in the way I talk about it, always looking for balance and harmony. So from that point of view, understanding that that's the backdrop to it all, and that our personal mind and the analytical machinery, which we might in an intellectual way attach our personal mind to that intellectual machinery, that's all caught up in the illusion of thought. So we create our entire experience through the illusion of thought. So if we accept that that's an illusion, yeah, then of course, yeah, absolutely, there's no such thing as a responsibility. So that's an understanding, that's an awareness, which ultimately is very helpful. But I guess I'm answering my question out loud or where I wasn't feeling clear, is that there is some clarity around realizing that, yeah, that personal responsibility is all caught up in the illusion of thought. And it's not real. And it's all subject to the standards and expectations and the rule book that I've created for myself around those standards and expectations. It's just another ruling in that book that there is such a thing as personal responsibility.
Let me check this out with you and see if we're on the same page. So what I'm hearing you saying is that personal responsibility is an idea. It's not actually something that's real.
Yes.
And what I'm saying is that we have experience that comes through us and we're not personally responsible for that experience. And that when we think we're personally responsible for creating that experience, it creates a lot of stress and suffering because we think that we should be able to do better at creating the experience that we're creating. I know for myself, I used to think that when I was sad or low or depressed, that I needed to fix that and do something about it. I didn't see that was experience that was coming through me and that there was nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
And in my mission to try and change it, all it did was get me more entrenched in that thinking and I would suffer more, not less.
Yeah.
I would get more stuck in the machinations of my mind rather than being in the flow of experience moving through me.
Yeah.
And in seeing that more for myself, I actually don't suffer now in the ways that I used to suffer.
Yeah.
It actually allows me to be in a lighter feeling more of the time. But if I were to get into a really low mood and feel sad and depressed, I wouldn't react to it or relate to myself in the way that I used to relate to myself, because I would understand it's not on me. It's just an experience that's coming through me. Doesn't mean anything about who I am. And, you know, it'll be temporary. It's going to end at some point.
Yeah, well, I guess for me, it's a case of clearing out the cobwebs, not the cobwebs, or some sort of vague remnant of misunderstanding that's surrounding this age-old question for me that started when I first came to this understanding, was a real obstacle. It was this idea that we don't have free will. So in a sense, for me, what you're now saying is that we have no personal responsibility is tantamount to saying that we have no free will. So I really thought I'd put that to bed and felt like I'd had an enormous insight around the fact that there is no free will when, you know, for a good period coming into this understanding and learning this understanding and going to various different seminars, that was a real struggle for me. So when I finally sort of started to see and realize, and the insight was that that free will is very much a part of my programming and conditioning. It's a byproduct of my programming and conditioning in the way that I see it. And so when I finally allowed that to sink in for me, and that may not mean anything to anybody else, but it meant a lot to me.
Well, maybe you need to give a bit more context.
Well, okay. Well, I can give you the story, the sort of historical version of my journey around free will. Was that I kept hearing, I guess, various things were said at conferences or seminars or conversations that I was involved in where people would say, you know, there's no such thing as free will. And it just sort of didn't really land for me. It didn't really make sense. And I think that my programming and conditioning and you know, who knows what, culture, religion, my visits to the Anglican church with my mom, I don't know. And the way that I had sort of set up free will in my mind was that there's this sort of dichotomy. There's me, the I of Angus, I am, and I have free will. I can decide what I want. And those choices will determine whether I get through the pearly gates and go to heaven or hell. So you start to see how free will became very important to me, because my life was really all about making the right decisions so that I would be able to live in the hereafter, whatever that is.
Right, so you weren't going to be burning for eternity.
No, that I wouldn't be burning in hell. So free will was very much in my mind as being a fundamental truth. At least that's how I saw it. But on some level, I'm sure I was also recognizing that could be folly. And anyway, but so this was a struggle for me, and it continued to be a struggle with me. And I remember us doing a training together. I think it was in Malibu. And I thought the training had gone pretty well for me. And some days later, you had some questions to ask me of my teachings around free will, as I recall.
Well, I remember you did illustration.
Uh-huh.
And afterward, when I was reflecting on the illustration, it didn't quite sit right with me, is what I recall.
Well, yes. And I guess I was probably overly sensitive about it, because I feel like what you were challenging me about was this idea that there really is no such thing as free will. So that just to me was, I don't know, that was heresy to me.
It was beyond the pale.
It was beyond the pale. But the worst thing about it was that we were about to go into a corporate training.
No, we did the training. You and I facilitated the training, and then we went and took a training. We went up to La Conner and did the professional training. And I had a really massive insight.
Oh, God, yes, yes. You can't. Yes.
So, what I remember is I was kind of had an inkling about something after you did the training. So I was like sort of reflecting and questioning your drawing because it didn't quite sit right with me. And then we went and did the training in La Conner, and I had this massive insight that was, it's not a lot in terms of words, but I just experienced this incredible freedom and release inside of me, because I could see how I had been thinking that somehow I was responsible for raising my level of consciousness still, and that I saw that that absolutely was not in my control, that it was just happening through me and that there was nothing for me to do, and that I was absolutely not responsible for my state of mind. That is just, again, something that happens. And it just felt so liberating to me. And I was so excited. I felt so good and inspired. And it was really freeing. And I remember telling you, and you looked horrified when I told you.
I did. It's all coming back to me now. I actually also remember having to have an emergency session with, I think, Linda and George Pransky. Because I just couldn't understand it. And
well, what happened was I had this insight. I was really excited. I told you about it. You were horrified. And we were, I think, just in a few days' time going to be doing a pretty large corporate training together. And you didn't feel like we could do it together based on where I was coming from.
Yeah. And also I had massive insight envy too, because just from the conversation that I had with the Pranskys, I think it was, they didn't really weigh in on the whole free will question to my satisfaction, or I don't think they even bothered weighing in on that conversation. They are actually more focused on the fact that, well, you know what, there will be times when Rohini has an insight and you'll feel like you're kind of a little bit behind, and that will change, and you'll be moments where you have an insight and she'll be playing catch up. That's just how it is in relationship. So all I felt was that I'm way far behind and I need to play catch up. So that put an added amount of pressure on me. And for whatever reason, when we went into that corporate training, I just felt we weren't on the same page and that you should probably lead it, because I just, in all good conscience, can't really sort of like stand up in front of the group and dispense my theories around about free will.
Well, the training was not about free
will. I know
it
was not about free will, but it just seemed like it was so such an important core thing to get a hold of. And I felt like it was, I think that how you were sharing it just sounded nihilistic. It's just like, you know, let's just like throw our hands up in the air and just resort to sheer anarchy. I didn't like it.
That is so interesting how that's very confronting to the ego, to think that we are not the ones responsible, and that somehow we should be managing and controlling our experience.
Yeah, and I fully understand that. I understand now that our ego, of course, is going to want to put up a fight, because, yeah, it's dealing with something that's formless. There's no form to it. The ego is the executive leader of form, dispensing decisions. There is free will, but it's all wrapped up in the illusion of thought. So I see that now. At the time, I had no sense of that whatsoever. And the story is interesting for me to sort of reflect upon, because I know that you know, we went ahead and we did that training and it was a success. It's like, you know, you led it beautifully, but I definitely took a more subordinate role. But I think I was really perplexed around this whole free will conversation. And there were some people saying there's no such thing as free will. And then other people were saying, of course there's free will. People that I, you know, love and respect. So it was kind of like I was really torn. And it wasn't really until I got to a seminar led by Elsie Spittle and Chip Chipman up in Soul Spring, where they do a school up there, where the penny finally dropped. And for me, that penny dropping was finding myself in a situation where I'd already gone to that seminar with this very strong intention that I'm not going to analyze anything. I'm not going to be looking at it through any kind of analytical machinery, and there was going to be any, you know, because I think that I had been to a seminar with them before where I had found myself very judgmental, and that was in the early days of this understanding, and I couldn't really figure things out, and I was sort of looking around the room and like, what on earth is going on? What are these prolonged periods of silence and this sort of focus on the feeling? What's all that about? I didn't know or understand that.
Well, I think what happened in that first time that you went is that your mind was just really sped up. So it's really uncomfortable to be in a relaxed, slow down setting, because the mind kind of, it gets really loud, and we tend to feel uncomfortable when the mind is so loud.
Yeah, my mind was fully loud and fully amplified in those periods of silence, where the other people in the room are obviously way more settled than I am, and have had some incredible insight, or someone's had an incredible insight, and it elicits this really beautiful feeling where people are reflective and they're quiet and they're silent. For me, in my very sped up state of mind, all I had was judgment for that. What on earth is happening here? They drunk the Kool-Aid. What on earth is going on? So on this particular occasion, my second visit to Salt Spring, I very much decided that I'm not gonna look at it through any lens that looks like judgment. And I'm going to be aware of that. And I'm just going to have this experience, hopefully in a very present way. But just to cut a long story very short, or at least make it shorter, I've already told a pretty long story, is that there was this moment in that weekend where one of the teachers, and I know it was Chip that was sharing, because I don't think Elsie was there on that particular morning, that he was sharing, and I couldn't even tell you what he was sharing, but there was a point where I just suddenly felt all this emotion well up inside of me. And it was really interesting, because I just suddenly had this immediate awareness, there's that emotion. My old self would have wanted to analyze that. What's that? Why is that happening? And I caught myself, and I said, I guess through free will, I caught myself and I said to myself, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to analyze it. I'm just going to leave it alone. I'll let the emotion flow through me. And in that allowance I had and surrender, I had this incredible insight that came through. It's like, oh, free will. Free will is just a part of my conceptual mind. Free will is nothing to do with that impersonal mind, where there is no judgment, there's no recrimination, there's no rule book, there's no programming and conditioning. There's just isness, there's just love, serenity. I don't know, how do we put words on something that is so formless? But there is no free will there. Free will is very much a product of my conceptual mind. It's very much a product of the illusion of thought. And it really, it's not real. So for me, that was really helpful, because on one hand, I can see where people are saying, yeah, there is free will. There's free will if it's part of the conceptual mind, it's part of the illusion of thought. Yeah, that's just a playground of thought. There is free will there, very much so. There's no free will at the impersonal mind level. And so that was an insight that was liberating for me. But it's so interesting now to fast forward myself to last week, whenever we're having that conversation with Tanner, and your follow-up reflections, there's still a little bit of stucco that I haven't removed that is preventing me from seeing this in a deeper way. And I know that you've kind of always seen this in a very deep way, and you had that massive insight when you went to that training. And I guess I'm still like sort of, you know, peeling off the layers, and I'm getting deeper, but I guess, you know, I kind of found myself getting kind of a little bit caught up with what Tanner was sharing, from a point of view, is like, yeah, you know, he's caught up in his conceptual mind, and he's struggling to sort of see it any other way. So I kind of understood it on that level, but I still, yes, I get fundamentally, I get what you're saying, and I've seen it in an insightful way, that there is no such thing as free will on that basis.
And what I mean by that, is that if we're really looking at everybody's doing the best that they can based on their understanding in the moment, if we're really seeing people's psychological innocence, then they can only do what makes sense to them in the moment. And they don't have control over what their understanding is in the moment. None of us do. And people often will make that leap, which you did, you go all nihilistic and dark on me, that somehow that says, I'm condoning murder, I'm condoning like horrific events. And I'm not saying that. Yes, those things happen because of the level of understanding people have inside of themselves in that moment. And it's not their fault. They're doing the best that they can. We're all doing the best that we can. And why this is so important to me is because what I've seen is when I don't put pressure on myself to try and do better than what I can, right? When what I've got is good enough, the understanding that I have is good enough, and I'm not trying to seek more, do more, try to be better in some way, that I am actually showing up better in the world, not worse. Yeah. It brings out the best in me, not the worst in me. And that when I'm trying to do better, when I'm trying to see more, when it does feel like a hard pill to swallow, that's when I'm putting that pressure on, and that's where I tend to have a harder time and tend to not be at my best.
Yeah, and the way that I was seeing it at the time was just like, just life was just going to break into sheer chaos. You were going to be mean to me, and that was okay. You were going to lie on the couch and watch Netflix all day, and that was okay. You were going to do anything that, to me, you know, that could be abhorrent was okay. And that's kind of how I wanted to see it, or how I was seeing it at the time.
Yeah, and I think especially, you know, talking about relationships, when we can see that people are always doing the best that they can, we have so much more room for compassion, but also room to look at, well, what do we do based on this being their best? And just as important, if not more important, this extends to ourselves too, and that can we genuinely see that we are doing the best in each moment? And can that be enough for us? Can we absolutely open our hearts to ourselves and see our innocence, see our goodness in however we're showing up? Because that's our best. And it's so easy to judge ourselves. It's so easy to be critical of how we show up. And that's when life gets difficult. And in my experience, life doesn't just get difficult. Relationships get really difficult. And so I say, start with ourselves first and see, can we really be okay with where we're at? Can we really recognize that we're not responsible for our state of mind? Yes, the description of how experience is created is that we have an experience created from thought, and we have a different experience depending on whatever state of mind we're in. Life looks differently. But can we allow that to just be something that is unfolding from that deeper part of our impersonal nature that we don't need to manage and control? And that when we take our hands off of the wheels, can we see that we have the resilience to navigate whatever comes forward in that? And that it's actually in us having that inner freedom that brings out our most loving, kind, generous nature more often.
Yeah, and I've got to a point where I see that. And what's interesting now is that, well, I guess I can say that. I can put my hand on my heart and I see that. I think that you see it in a deeper way. I think you have more clarity around it. I think what's interesting for me now is that I had this insight around free will, and now you're using different language, and you're talking about personal responsibility, and it's basically the same thing. So there was something in that language that allowed me to get caught up in my old programming and conditioning, my Anglican church programming and conditioning. That's still running a little bit around this idea that, you know, that I have to have free will, so that I have at least some sort of insurance plan, some sort of indemnity policy, is that what they call them? Where you know, the push come to a shove, I'm going to be tipping the scales in favor of heaven rather than hell.
You want a key to the pearly gates?
I want a key to the pearly gates. So there was obviously a little bit of that, still playing for me, and I still remain curious about the depth through which you see this, because it's like this. There's a strong element of certainty for you around this that I feel like I don't quite have yet.
And I don't know if I have certainty. I just love the feeling of freedom that I experience when I recognize that it's not on me. Like, it's just so freeing. And it's so healing for me to have that inner freedom. So I don't know that it's certainty. It's just a recognition of that inner peace and freedom and the healing that comes from that.
Yeah, and I haven't quite got there yet. I feel I want to be transparent about that. I think there's a sense that I can really, you know, I had this insight on Soul Spring, and that there was a lot of clarity that came from that that really allowed me to feel like, you know, I can move on from this conversation now that was difficult for me. But I think I'm still, there's a part of me that's hung up on this sort of programming and conditioning. I see it as programming and conditioning that I can't let go of the controls to that extent, or that I'm not seeing it in quite the way that you're seeing it, where there is that feeling of liberation, that I'm really doing the best that I can here and that I'm fine just as things are. Because if I really got a hold of that, I think that probably there would be pretty much zero suffering in my life. So for me, I guess there's a spectrum to this, and you're further along in that spectrum of understanding.
Well, it's infinite, and I don't think we can really compare. I certainly wouldn't want to compare. And I certainly know there's so much more for me to see. So I hope I'm not coming across as if like, oh, I've seen this and I know it. I'm just saying that I've experienced some freedom for myself that's been really helpful. And I'm doing my best to convey what has allowed me to experience more peace of mind to others. So in the hope that they can experience more peace of mind, and that I thought it would be a good conversation today, because I didn't want people to be listening to what we're sharing and using it against themselves and getting more caught up and feeling that they somehow need to work harder, do more in order to deal with this personal responsibility piece.
Yeah, and I do, I want to reiterate that I do totally see it. I guess if anything, there's a sense within me that there's a lot more to see still. And I think that's born out of the fact that I now recognize that me getting tripped up by that new way of talking about free will suggested that, yeah, there's a little bit more clarity for you here, and there's some more learning. But I do see it as a pathway to liberation and feelings of liberation that are really extraordinary. And I've seen that with my clients. And I'm thinking about conversations that I've had recently with people in recovery, where I've noticed within the recovery community, sometimes there can be some languaging around, you know, I feel like I'm really in a good place, and you know, there's a sense that maybe they want to suggest that they're healed in some way, or that they're recovering well, but they would always follow up with a statement where they would say, "But there's so much more work for me to do. You know, I'm doing really well, but there's a lot more work to do." And I always put a red flag up to that statement and suggest that that's going to probably get you into trouble, because the sped up mind, the very thing that probably is going to be at the very genesis, or actually going to be front and center of those decisions where you look to self-soothe with addiction, is going to be a sped up mind. So for me, I really have to have a conversation with them to make them let them know that yeah, that's probably going to be looking in the wrong direction. You're putting so much pressure on yourself to do better, and you're really doing the best that you can. And that in the recovery community itself is quite a controversial statement to suggest that people are just doing the best that they can, because the ego is so hell-bent on doing better, and all of our programming and conditioning around so the society is to do better. Let's keep on doing better. But there is a better way to look at it.
It's different.
Yeah. So for me, when I start to look at it in a more sort of universal way, that universal intelligence is always looking for a way to up level. It's always looking for a way to up level. But the thrust of that up leveling is towards balance and harmony. So I just got to trust that. I can let go of the controls on that basis. see it from that vantage point, there's really not a lot for me to do here. I'm always doing my best. And really all that I'm trying to do is to sort of like keep up with that intelligence behind life who's always doing what's best for me. And yet my ego kind of like gets insecure and feels like, yeah, you know what? I need to think about this. I need to sort of really make sure we're making the right moves here. And that's me working too hard. So this idea of sort of letting go of the controls and letting go of that kind of responsibility, that's what feels liberating. And I see that. But I don't always remember, and I do get caught up.
Yeah, and me too. And that's where I find it so liberating, is because it doesn't matter that I get caught up. Like, it is not on me that I'm getting caught up. It is not my responsibility to fix getting caught up. It's just part of the human experience. And I don't need to try and change that. I don't need to try and improve myself one bit. I'm going to have whatever experience I'm going to have based on the level of understanding I have. And that's good enough.
It's almost like if we're in a computer game, that this is the game of life. Let's say there are 20 levels to the game of life. I feel like I don't even know. Let's say I'm at level 5 and you're at level 6. You're one beat ahead of me, but you kind of really understand how to get to level 6. And I kind of like find myself in level 6 and then keep falling down and going back to level 5. But you've really anchored yourself in level 6 and knocking on the door of level 7 because you figure this one out. You're putting all your energy into level 7 now. Level 6 is really handled and taken care of.
I don't know.
I'm still sort of like getting myself comfortable at level 6. But I do see it. I do know. I know enough how to get there. It's like I'm just not as sure-footed in level 6 as you are.
Well, I hope it's helpful for others in terms of taking the pressure off. And just to clarify, I understand that it looks like we're making choice all day long. Like, I'll choose what I want for breakfast. I'll choose to go for a hike or not go for a hike. On that level, as you're saying, Angus, there are a multitude of choices happening. But what I'm saying is that our choices are always going to be an extension and a reflection of our level of understanding, and that we can't make different choices that aren't aligned with our level of understanding.
Well, absolutely. Ultimately, it comes back to state of mind.
Yes.
Where if we just really accept the fact, the fundamental truth, the fact, the principle that our behavior is going to be a reflection of our state of mind, that we're only as good as our state of mind in that moment, and that anything that we do, which can, again, it sounds controversial, we can let ourselves off the hook because we're only really showing up from that state of mind.
Well, letting ourselves off the hook means seeing our psychological innocence in that we are always doing the best that we can based on our understanding in the moment. And it doesn't matter if our understanding shifts 5 minutes from now, we still did 5 minutes before what was aligned with our level of understanding in that moment. And that's all we can do. We can't do anything other than that.
Yeah. Yes. And it's seeing that psychological innocence that allows us to have that sense of liberation. We can suddenly let go of all that pressure. We can throw away the rule book or realize that it's just an illusion. It's just part of the realm of thought, and that it doesn't define me. And there is no conversation around whether or not you're going to get through the pearly gates and going to go right or left.
Oh my goodness, Angus, I had no idea how strong this conditioning was.
Well, evidently it is.
Yeah.
But letting go of all that is incredible. And I guess for me, when that remark was made, is kind of like it's just seeing how
what remark?
Well, that, you know, the personal responsibility remark is kind of like you see what you're up against with your programming and conditioning. We're up against that all day long, but there is a different vantage point from which to view the whole experience, the one that is human, the one that is spiritual. We are a spiritual being having this human experience, and this human experience is defined through thought.
Well, the irony is that all that effort to try to improve ourselves so we get better behavior and better outcomes actually reduces our outcomes and doesn't give us the best behavior. And it's actually through taking the pressure off of ourselves that we get the best of ourselves. That naturally comes out.
Yeah. as borne out perfectly by my experience in Saltspring, because when I took the pressure off me having to analyze my emotions that were coming up, when I left that alone and obviously was extremely settled in my state of mind, then I have this incredible insight. And that to me is, you know, that's just, I mean, that was an incredible reference point, but it supports what you're saying. It's kind of like, yeah, that other part of us that, you know, that is universal will always shine through when we stop grinding away the gears on our analytical machinery trying to find the answer.
And what do we know about relationships? We know that relationships work really well when people take the pressure off of themselves, when they settle, when they experience their true nature. Relationships flourish.
Yeah, no, exactly. And not just relationships, just really, just this, this is just life in general.
Yeah.
It works way better when we allow ourselves to trust that universal element.
So why were you arguing with me about this before we started?
I think I just, you know, now that I've said it all out loud, I feel I've got a little bit more comfortable at level six. I'm ready. I might even be ready for level seven now.
I'm going to have to be playing catch up to you.
That's right.
I think you've had your level seven that I haven't caught up with.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's accurate.
I do.
What, you mean I somehow bypassed level six?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that. I found some sort of hyperloop to level eight or nine.
Yeah, it could have been level 10.
So that's why I have to keep coming back to this.
When you talk about those incredible visuals that you have of the universe and just the perfection of that, like to me, that's like beyond level 10.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm just very visual in that sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a whole other conversation, I guess. Yeah, but it's, well, you know, I guess well, I feel like this has been a bit of a journey for me, this podcast, because I feel I've actually got some more clarity just by having a chance to look at it. I think it's, you know, you're drumming home that point a little bit more, and I'm able to hear it with a bit more clarity.
Well, this really, to me, is the whole premise behind rewilding. Rewilding is about letting go of taming, letting go of managing, letting go of controlling, and really trusting in that divine energy behind life and seeing the beauty that comes through it. And that feels true to me.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing I think that's interesting, and I've heard other people talk about this recently, I think it might have even been Kristen Heath talking about this recently, is that, you know, you can have an insight, you know, you could say that an insight is kind of like, you know, maybe it's a moment, you could say it's an awakening too. People can become awakened. I'm not suggesting for a moment that I'm putting myself in that category, by the way. Let's say I've had an insight, but Christine was talking about how people could become awakened, but then they could slip, you know, fall back to sleep. And I think that I fell back a little bit back to sleep with this particular insight. And I think that's a lot to do with how strong my programming conditioning is. So in a sense, this conversation has helped me, you know, hopefully wake up a little bit.
And again, to just normalize all of that, I think that that is just how the human condition works. We wake up, we fall asleep, we wake up again, we are peaceful, we get caught up and we suffer, then we're peaceful again. Like, if we can just understand that that is the human experience and we don't need to try and fix it or change it, and that even with it looking like that, we can't help but grow and evolve in consciousness, we just get to enjoy it all, or at least be present for it all.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you always put that into such eloquent and beautiful words.
You just looked out the window. What was that?
Why is it so dark all of a sudden?
I think it's going to rain.
It's going to rain. It's like it was 80 degrees today. Well, I'm sorry. I completely lost my train of thought.
Did you think we've been doing the podcast for like 3 hours?
I also put one moment. Yes, I did.
It reminds me of that TikTok you showed me the other day where a guy fell asleep at his desk in a cubicle and all of the people in the office went and hid, and then he called someone and the guy was whispering, why are you whispering? I'm at the movies. It's Sunday. And he said, have I been sleeping since Friday?
That's right. They all disappeared out of the workroom. It made him feel like he'd been sleeping for days. It's hysterical. Yeah, no, I feel like I suddenly lost 3 hours. The sky outside now looks like it's probably 7:30, and we're living in a sort of, what would you say, like a twilight in this room that we're recording in. It's like it's really dark in here. I got concerned.
Well, I think that's the perfect place to wrap it up. Or is there anything else you want to say?
No, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. Yeah, I feel like I've said all I've needed to say on the matter, and you've been eloquent as usual.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, let's end it there.
So just to synthesize it, all we're suggesting is that it's okay for you to relax and be you and trust that your natural state is going to come through you. And that doesn't mean that you're not going to get caught up. It doesn't mean you're not going to have the very normal human experiences of upset and reactivity, and that that's not on you. That is you doing your best with the level of understanding you have in that moment. And our question for you is, can you open your heart to that and see your psychological innocence and feel the freedom of taking the pressure off yourself? Thank you so much for listening to Rewilding Love. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know by subscribing on iTunes, and we would love for you to leave a review there.
iTunes reviews will steer people to this podcast who need help with their relationships.
If you would like to learn more about our work and our online rewilding community, please visit our website, therewilders.org.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week.